Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. Every week we chat with an influencer and change makers to see what makes them tick and learn. Today, Monday, March 28th, gosh, I can't believe it's so late in the month, 2011, I am delighted to welcome Guy Kawasaki, who is the author of a new book called Enchantment. And that's actually not the full title, but I think it will become evident why it's called that as we chat. Welcome, Guy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, two-time winner on the A-List, twice. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. So you have written, this is your 10th book?
Yes, it is.
Can you believe it? So you've made 10 books now, and people are saying all over the web that this is your best book yet. And I have to say that in reading the book over the weekend, I was absolutely captivated from the very, very beginning. Not that I'm not captivated by your other books, but this it felt more personal somehow. So you know, when books are personal like that, I always like to start with the question of, you know, and you've probably gotten this a million times, where did the idea come from? Kind of where did it generate?
Well, the idea came from my study of the topic of influence and persuasion. And there's a book named Influence by Robert Cialdini, and there's another book called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. So those were the two primary inspirations.
And you have some very public admirers of the book that are on the Enchantment website, not the least of which are Richard Branson and Steve
yeah.
Wozniak and Robert Scoble, and the list goes on. But it was one of those things that it really chimed with me with the book that you had, I guess, a former professor, Dr. Phil Zimbardo,
yes.
Professor emeritus of psychology at Stanford University, and he said that, you know, clearly he taught you well. So I was curious what the connection was there with sort of, you know, as you see it, the elements of, you know, what he says, teaching how to pull gems from people's hearts and minds and how to become an effective practitioner of life's crucial domains. So what does that mean for people that haven't read the book yet?
Well, the book is trying to help people have better relationships with others, whether they are personal friends or customers. And it starts off with the basis of helping people become more likable and trustworthy, and goes on from there. There's 12 chapters, and explains how to become likable, trustworthy, how to prepare for a launch of a product or service, how to actually break down resistance, how to use technology, push and pull technology, how to enchant your boss, how to enchant people who work for you, and finally, how to resist enchantment.
And so let's start first with the concept of, and this was one that I could think of so many examples in the Silicon Valley alone of people who don't seem to want to be likable, because the, you know, sort of the contrarian point of view is a very popular one for certain personality types.
yeah.
But it seemed to me that this book is the kind that kind of transcends that, right, where, you know, enchanting your boss is still going to be important for those kinds of, those characters that feel like they need to always play devil's advocate. You know, what about the importance of the different, not that you're trying to homogenize society, but, you know, for the sake of, a conversation about the book where it's talking about likability and changing hearts and minds, about yourself, about your product, about other people, where do sort of the contrarians fit into the spectrum of different types of people?
Well, certainly, I think to be likable, one must be willing to accept diversity. So, and accepting diversity requires an open mind, at least. So, I don't think there's anything in the book that says you should not respect and regard other people's lifestyles, races, creeds, colors, whatever. But having said that, you know, I can't imagine that a way to enchant people is to be a jerk. I mean, you know. I
but
think
you
I would draw
know
the
some
line
of the
there.
People that I'm referring to, though. You know, there's there are high-profile people that just, I mean, it amazes me. They will get on stages, and they're either interviewing people or they're part of keynotes, and they're just contrarian to the point of, you know, you just want to go, you know, like, afterwards go up to them and just go, God, why didn't you give that person a chance? I didn't even hear their about their project or their really their, you know, what they're trying to accomplish.
Is his initials M-A?
Maybe.
How about J-C?
I think you were right with the first one, but I won't elaborate. But
I just curious.
You know, I respect everybody's point of view, but sometimes it just feels like, you know, especially with this idea of you know, and last year I interviewed Stow Boyd, and he had moved to the East Coast, and he said, you know, he felt like the Valley was operating under this perception of failure. And ever since then, you know, I've been sort of looking for those bright spots, you know, where people aren't feeling like there's this failure, and that where there is innovation still happening in the Valley. And, you know, certainly working with different VC groups, you see all these fabulous ideas. And, you know, had Dave McClure on the show earlier in the year, and, you know, he was talking about lots of cool companies that he's working with. But there are these people where, you know, you just – you know, you want to hear about these cool ideas and see how they flesh in your own mind, but they seem to prohibit, in a way, others from kind of enchanting you with what their concept is. And, you know, I suppose there are different, you know, I guess it comes down to that sort of, there are going to be different personality types regardless of diversity. And kind of where that sat as you were writing the book, without getting too far down this path, just, you know, kind of how you thought of those characters as you were writing.
I didn't.
Well, that's an excellent answer. It's probably very honest, too.
I didn't let them cloud my mind. This, you know, this book is not for everybody. There are some people who don't care to be enchanting. What can I say? And God bless them. They don't have to buy this book.
Oh, that's,
or they
that's...
shouldn't buy this book.
Yeah, that's probably very true. Now, so why do you think that you've gotten such, so we talked a little bit about the celebrity factor of the book itself, and, you know, you have actually this fabulous Facebook application I should tell people about. So I took the enchantment quiz last night.
Uh-huh.
I was very disappointed. It said I should buy your book right away.
Okay.
So what does that say for me? I read the book, and I still need to buy the book. So I'm going to have to reread the book again and make sure.
Well,
that
it shouldn't have come out like that. That's for sure.
Well, no, or, you know, maybe I was scanning too quickly.
Maybe.
But you've won yourself some very high profile admirers here, obviously, at the very start, and, you know, you've been doing the rounds with the book. I think it's a very important book, especially at this moment in time. You know, it reminds me a lot of, you know, and I know you have the connection with President Obama, with Hawaii and other factors, but, you know, this sort of idea of hope, in a sense that there's hope for you to be able to change and make a difference with your own personality. So it's very empowering in that sense.
Well,
do you think that's part of what, you know, was kind of or what do you make of you know, kind of the praise that's come on the book from both famous and maybe non-famous bloggers out there who are writing that, God, this is Guy's best book?
Well, I you know, I've been very fortunate. The reviews, believe it or not, most business publishers send out about 200 galleys, and we sent out about 1,600. And so we sent out 8 times the number of books that most publishers do. And right now we have about 300 blog posts and reviews about the book, which is a lot, to put it mildly.
It is.
And there's also about 150 reviews on Amazon. And I think it was just couple of factors. You know, I know a lot of people. I've worked with a lot of people. I've helped and been helped by a lot of people. I also, you know, I'm willing to grind it out very hard. So, you know, a lot of it is just hard work, I have to tell you.
There's just no getting around the hard work, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's the secret to my success anyway.
And what a secret it is. So
yeah.
When you talk about, you know, sort of getting into more of the meat of the book, the changing hearts, minds, and actions, which is the other part of the title, you know, besides enchantment, can you tell people, you know, that haven't read the book that, you know, might be thinking, wow, Guy Kawasaki wrote another book, but why should I buy it? Kind of what is the sort of elevator pitch for this book?
The elevator pitch is that this is a book that will walk you through the process of increasing your trustworthiness and your likability and help you create a great product or service that will enable you to change people's hearts, minds, and actions. And hopefully by changing people's hearts, minds, and actions, you will also change the world and make the world a better place.
So was there something that you noticed in your own personal life that you, I mean, you're a very enchanting guy, I got to say, you know, that we've had you on the show before, you know, I know you laugh, but everybody loves, you know, when I said, oh, you know, trying to get Guy on for the book, everybody loves you. I mean, it is hard not to love you, Guy. You are just a really, you're a fun guy to be around. And honestly, and I have yet to see you in person, but I should make a better effort to get out there, as I was saying before the show started. But I mean, do you think that plays into it too, that there's, you know, there's something about you in particular that you're kind of bottling in this book in a sense?
Well, you know, it's hard to answer that question without appearing to be disenchanting. I don't know. Well, certainly the author of a book called Enchantment had better be enchanting, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
I mean, one would hope. So I'll tell you something funny, though. You know, now that I've written the book and I have very specific recommendations on how to smile, how to dress, how to shake your hand, you know, all that. So I'm very cognizant that people who have read the book are going to be watching to see if I actually walk the talk, right?
Oh, yeah.
So now I have had to change things I've done because I know people are watching. So it's been very interesting.
So one of the things I always notice about books, and we'll get to a little bit of the secrets of the handshake and that kind of thing in just a second. But I wanted to ask you, because I'm always enchanted the most when an author is as sweet as you are in the way that you dedicated the book.
okay.
You know, I am. I'm a total sucker for it. My husband's working on a book, and I actually wanted to take my iPad to him and say, would you ever say something that's nice about me? Beth Kawasaki, you know, your wife, you mentioned each of your children by their first name, which, you know, is just a lovely thing to see. And, you know, and you talk about, you know, the kinds of things that they add to your life. What I'm wondering is, you know, some wives are really good checks on their husband for the kinds of things that you're talking about to make sure that they're walking the walk. Do you ever find that in your family between your wife and your children that anybody's checking you to make sure that you're particularly enchanting, or could they kind of care less?
Oh, my God, every day. Are you kidding me? Well, for one thing, I use my wife for feedback a lot. She's prevented me from doing many stupid things. So, yeah.
That's
every
a helpful
day.
Thing.
Yeah, every day, I promise you.
What's one thing that your wife would prevent you from, you know, in the past or theoretically, that your wife would prevent you from doing that would be less than enchanting?
Oh, that there are times that I wish, you know, that I came close to wreaking revenge on people for doing things they did to me that she prevented me from doing. And sometimes I push the edge of jokes she prevents me from using jokes. Yeah.
Those are great examples. Now, I remember you at Blogworld like 2-3 years ago, and the iPhone had just come out. God, what was that, 4 years ago maybe now? God, I'm dating myself.
Yeah.
But in any event, you talked about what you would have done differently. And Steve Rubell was interviewing you, and I'll never forget because people were raising their hands who had the iPhone, and it was kind of a new novel thing. It wasn't open yet. And you talked about what you would have done differently. And you start this book, actually, by talking about being enchanted by an Apple computer. Can you talk a little bit about that example?
Yeah, well, this is back in 1983 when I first saw Macintosh. And it's difficult to relate because that's so long ago. But in 1983... a personal computer with upper and lower case was considered advanced, and there was no mouse, no integrated graphics and multiple fonts and all this kind of stuff. So when you saw Macintosh for the first time, it was a very, very religious experience for me. Completely changed my expectations of computers.
And, your life, really, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for me, because I went to work for Apple. Absolutely changed my life. Yeah. Yeah, it was a red-letter day in my life.
But you talked about the bottle caps, the Pepsi bottle caps.
Yes, Andy Hertzfeld wrote a program where Pepsi bottle caps and a little Macintosh icon was bouncing around in a window. And if you're coming from a character-based sort of typewriter orientation to personal computing, to see a window with bouncing Pepsi caps is remarkable. It sounds stupid now, but it was remarkable. And,
I really enjoyed seeing the screenshot, too.
Yeah.
Because that took me back a ways. It's always interesting when you see that stuff and you go, God, I remember that. For every intern or every person that I supervise, especially as a woman, you don't dare say how old you are, but sometimes, it just comes out. You're like, God, I remember that. Or, Mark Cuban on Shark Tank now. And I remember working with him when he was still at broadcast.com and was like a major programming video geek, and it's holy crap, he's on Shark Tank. We talked about a little bit about how you were initially enchanted by Apple. And, I don't want to get too far into that because I think there's some fun pieces of, for example, people go into work today. Let's say they're listening now on the West Coast and they're listening to this on their way into work on iTunes. What do they do different when they walk into the office? They want to be enchanting. Besides having not read the book. They need to read the book, but still.
Well, it starts with real basics. Are you smiling? Are you smiling with using your eyes and your jaw? And, some people have said, Guy, you talk about such basic stuff. Everybody knows that. Well, let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. Not everybody knows that. Or maybe they know it, but they don't do it. So, it starts off with a great smile, a good handshake, adequate dress. It's not too high, not too low. I don't mean the hemline. I mean the level of dress.
Of course. Being in California.
Those kind of basics. Yeah. And then working on trustworthiness, where you think of the world not as a zero-sum game that, everybody can gain, that... you think like a baker making boar pies and bigger pies, not an eater just trying to get a bigger slice of an existing pie. All of these things add up to a more enchanting relationship with others. And these are very basic things.
So now one of the things I was thinking about is, having a consultancy myself, I work with really big clients and then I work with smaller stealth startups. And so one of the particular startups I think about, there's some competitive folks that have entered the fray. And as I said, dating myself, having done this a while and having been through a couple dot booms, dot busts, you get used to those characters coming in and different members of the team kind of going, ugh, that person really rubs me the wrong way. Because they're not really so interested in enchantment. They're maybe on the board, or, you know, and they're getting more granularly involved, or they're, you know, doing high-powered business development, whatever else. Are there roles in an organization at a particular moment where it's not a good idea to be enchanting, to try to kind of not be enchanting?
Oh, hard to imagine. I guess you could make that theoretical case, but there may be people not worth giving the effort to enchant, but I don't know if there's anyone that, you know, that, I don't know if there's a time or place to be anti-enchanting, to purposely try to piss somebody off. I just think it takes too much energy. I mean, life is too short.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, one of the things I really thought of, and I'm going to ask you about this because you're from Hawaii, and I really felt kind of annoyed. So you know, I when you were talking about dress and that sort of thing, and I was thinking about President Obama and how much crap he got when he was on vacation the last time because he's wearing flip-flops.
Oh, really?
Okay. He got tons of crap in the press. You know, CNN, you know, oh, my God, the president's wearing flip-flops. You know, I mean, do we not consider context at some point? I mean, the guy's from Hawaii, right? I would think in a tropical climate, it would be pretty standard to wear flip-flops. Are there ever moments where you just go, God, I mean, you know, the press itself can be pretty unenchanting at moments. And I say this as somebody who was a reporter once, you know, full time. That's what I did. You know, is there ever a moment that surprises you? I guess it sounds like you stay pretty far away from that kind of stuff.
I'd say that occurs every 10 or 15 minutes. It happens a lot. Yeah.
Probably more than it should, huh?
Yeah, I mean, some stuff that the press cares about, they're just, I don't know, they're just clueless. I don't get it. Yeah, I agree. No question. There's just some things that you just need to learn to ignore, which my wife helps me ignore some stuff, but it amazes me. I'm glad it amazes you, too.
Yeah, it amazes. Well, I got out of the news business before it stopped amazing me, thank God, and I joined the Peace Corps. So that definitely will change your life. I'll tell you, really quickly, you start to really thank God for the little things, or whatever it is that you believe in. If nothing, great. But in any event, you know, one thing that, you know, obviously you've had lots of galleys out on this book, and there's been lots of reviews. Anything that's really surprised you, taken you aback, or that you know, would go back and add an additional section or note about in additional, you know, in further editions of the book?
You mean if I could do it over?
Yeah.
Well, not yet. You know, I realize that for sure the sections on technology, you know, pushing and pull, Twitter, Facebook, and all that, within a few years, it's going to be outdated. I don't know how it will be outdated because I can't predict the future. So I face the choice when writing the book. Do I put this section in knowing it's going to be outdated, or do I leave it out and make the book incomplete for today? And so obviously I chose to put it in knowing it would be inaccurate in the future. So I don't know how I could have avoided that situation. And you know, I have the benefit of many years that, you know, Dale Carnegie wrote his book in, I don't know, 1930 or something, and I wrote my book in 2009. So, you know, surely I should have some sections that he doesn't.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, arguably, why write the book, right? So I know that's going to occur, which is unfortunate but unavoidable.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, to be fair, Michael Gartenberg, research director at Gartner, actually compared your book to How to Win Friends and Influence People, saying it's the best overall treatise on interpersonal relationships since Dale Carnegie wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People, which had to be a huge, and were you surprised by that? It's a huge compliment.
Yeah, you know, I sent him a galley, and he kind of said that, And I said, wow, can I get you to say that for the blurb? And there you go. That's how easy it was.
And Richard Branson wrote quite a bit as well, which I thought was really interesting. Have you met every single person? Have you met Richard Branson?
Oh, yeah. The time I met Richard Branson, we were both speaking in Russia, and he asked me if I flew on Virgin, and I said no because I'm a United Airlines global service level. And he got on his knees and started polishing his shoes with my coat. And, you know, that's the day I started flying Virgin America. So, yeah.
That's quite a story.
Yeah, it is a great story. It can't be much better than that.
Yeah, I mean, so each of these people, obviously, you've met and impressed, which is in and of itself impressive. Where do you go from here, Guy?
You mean in my life?
Yeah, in your life. You've written this book, and it's like one that, you know, seems like resoundingly everybody's like, this is like the pinnacle in a lot of ways. It's really being exalted. So, you know, the fear is always, you know, when you do something that's so loved, you know, people love to tear other people down. You know, thank God we're not here in Great Britain. But you know, I mean, they do. You know, there are those personality types that will find flaws in whatever it is. But you know, hands down, people love this book. It is, I think it's part Gaia Kawasaki in a bottle. It's part, you know, manifesto on how to remember the niceties of a better age, borrowing from lots of different ones. And it's just fantastic. Thought was, if I had written this book, my God, what would I write next? So
well,
my thought was, for you, you know, do you even have that in mind?
Not at all. Not at all. Not one iota. I am, you know, I'm going to be marketing this book for another good 6 months. I won't even think about writing another book. And if this book sells enough, I'll never write another book. You know what, I'm quitting while I'm ahead. So, well, you know, to tell you the truth, the book in its first week was on the New York Times bestseller list, and I don't know if it'll be on the second week, because sometimes these books, they just explode out the gate, and, you know, all the Guy fans have bought it, but now, the Guy fans are done, and the question is, will it spread out to more, you know, people who are not Guy fans? And the answer to that question is, I don't know.
Well,
now,
I really
on
hope
Amazon,
you end up on Oprah over this book. If she can believe in The Secret, this is a lot more tactile and, you know, really speaks to that, the technology contingent, and a lot more groups around, you know, across the board.
If you know Oprah, feel free to tell her to put me on the show.
Well, hey,
I would love to be
live
on her show.
And
huh?
we've got this can be syndicated anywhere, so we should definitely say, we should make a Facebook petition to get you on Oprah on her final year to have you talk about Enchantment, because you were one of the most, I mean, in speaking with you, and like I said, I haven't met you in person yet, but I presume I will at some point. We have lots of people in common, but you were one of the most wonderful people to book even on a show. You're this huge name, and you are just so, yeah, you know, if it jives with my schedule, it's great. If it doesn't, that's, you know, it just doesn't. And, you know, for that very reason, I always love having you on, because other people, I've got to say, are a pain in the ass. And it's
really?
Just,
what do they make you do?
It's just, it feels like hoop jumping. It's like the assistant doesn't really know the schedule. It's like, why the hell have if they don't know your schedule, that sort of thing. And, you know, you're just one of those people that if you can do it, you seem to try, which is just a lovely thing. And so, like I said, I think definitely a Facebook petition to get you on Oprah is definitely in order.
I don't even know how to do one of those. If you can, start
well,
it, I'll get people to
can.
Sign up.
Yeah, the rest of us can, so we definitely need to do that. But any final, I know you've got a hard stop at 9 o'clock. Any final comments on the book before we tell people, you know, definitely buy this book? Any final thought, maybe because you talked about the guys out there. I think this is really actually a great book for women because, you know, they forget that things are very equal these days in ways that maybe they don't even imagine. Any final thoughts about any of those arenas?
Well, actually, I was going to give more advice to guys. But, so can I leave
with
a piece of advice for guys? All right. So my advice to you is that if you want to enchant your wife, the most important thing you could do is when she asks you to do something, no matter what you're doing, drop it and do what she asks. That's my last piece of advice.
Very good. And with that, Guy Kawasaki, I appreciate you being on the show, and I will let you get on with your day.
All right. Thank you very much
for
having
me. Go enchant some more
Take
people.
Care.
Yeah,
okay,
you
bye
too.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. And that was Guy Kawasaki, author of a new book called Enchantment, The Art of Changing Hearts, Minds, and Actions. And I love that hearts is right there in the very forefront because I think, you know, if you can get to someone's heart, that's pretty amazing. So I want to thank each and every one of you who've tuned into the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely, this morning. As you may have noticed, I've taken a bit of a hiatus. I've been on the For Dummies channel. It's actually the 20th anniversary this month of the For Dummies series, the famous black and yellow books. And I've had the great pleasure of speaking with a number of tech writers, writers who've talked about Mac and PC, and this week, Twitter Marketing for Dummies. So tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Pacific, I am interviewing Kyle Lacy. So for those of you that want to hear more about Twitter Marketing for Dummies, please head on over to the For Dummies channel, which is at blogtalkradio.com/For Dummies, and also available, of course, on iTunes. We hope you enjoyed the program. If so, we'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio or subscribe, and please rate us on iTunes. I need to hear your feedback to get better. And you know my Facebook page, you know my Twitter handle. Please be in touch with questions for future guests, future recommendations for guests. We've got some cool people coming up in the pipeline, and always love to hear from you about kind of keeping you happy. JenniferNeely.com, my website, is undergoing renovations, and so it's a little bit dead right now, but over the weekend it will hopefully be refreshed. So please feel free to head on over and get more free information, archives, and webcasts there. We have also the social media boot camp that I've been working on, so mediabistro.com/social media marketing boot camp. If you want to enroll late, there's not you still have time. The promo code is JN. Jack Nancy, JN, 5050, available there. And we teach you how to do a social media strategy, and we've got great keynotes along the way. And we'll be doing a second one over the summer with Guy Kawasaki. So he'll be one of the speakers along with Shel Israel and some other fantastic, fantastic names. And I want to thank you for joining us once again on this edition of The A-List with Jennifer Neely. Have a great day.